This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervie, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And with me, well, not exactly with me, but in the studio is Carrie Kasem. Thanks, Carrie, for getting in the studio. I had something come up. I had a call in remotely.
That's okay. We've been doing, since COVID hit, this is kind of how it's been. So that's totally fine.
Well, I think it's more than totally fine because I think we're really respecting the social distancing by me being at home right now and you being in the studio. And we're taking it to the extreme. We're more than 6 feet apart.
I'd say a lot more than 6 feet apart. Yeah.
And we are FaceTiming. So for those of you who are listening, I'm looking at Carrie, and your hair looks a little lighter than it has. Is it just the camera and the lighting that you have today, or what's going on with
your hair? I have to say that is most men would never see that ever. I got a straightener on it, and it did lighten my hair a bit. Wow, I'm actually very impressed by you, Alan. That's very impressive.
Well, that's what I'm here for. I've made a successful legal career in noticing women's highlights, and it looks actually auburn, your hair. Would that be a nice way to describe it?
Yeah, like a light brown auburn, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to something that's a little more significant. There's other things going on in the world that may be more important than Carrie's hair color. There's lots going on. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm getting a little bit depressed about how long this is going on and what we have in store for us. I'm really fearful of September when the kids are supposed to go back to school, but it looks like they're going to be doing remote learning, which has been very difficult. It's easy for me to speak to you remotely, but for kids to learn, my two kids, I'm real concerned about, and I know that it's just getting frustrating. So I'm not sure.
I agree with you. I think a lot of my friends who have kids are saying the exact same thing as you. I look at statistics. I look at the fact that 0.00046% of the population has died from this. That's 0.00046. Now, most it's even below 0% for children. So, I think my opinion is the kids should go back to school. And I think that the governor is doing a terrible job and the media is fear mongering. That's my opinion. Well, you know that.
You know, Carrie, I know you have strong opinions, but I'm really excited. Not excited. I think, Harry, don't take this as offense, but I'm really happy that Harry is here because Harry Nelson brings with him a lot of credibility in this area. There's very few people, especially very few attorneys, who have the knowledge and experience in healthcare like Harry does. And I'm going to introduce him in a moment. Later on the show, I just want everyone to know that we do have a little change of speed when we bring on Jeff Lewis, not the guy on TLC. Carrie, I know you're standing up and I don't know what you're doing, but I hope you're listening to me. So I thought the Jeff Lewis that was coming on was going to like redesign my house or something, but it's a different Jeff Lewis, right?
It is a different Jeff Lewis. Absolutely. It's a different Jeff Lewis.
So it's not the guy from the television that, gets really pissed off at everyone and
no.
Like really rude and mean and everything.
No, he's a First Amendment and privacy attorney. He's not the guy who builds houses.
So he's not going to talk about like Meghan and Harry's house, like what they need to do to make it look nicer?
I would go with no. I'd go with he's going to talk about what the paparazzi is doing to them in the lawsuit. I'm very excited to talk to him in the second half of the show.
Okay. Dronerazzi, I think. You said paparazzi, but because we're talking about drones here, I like to call it dronerazzi.
There you go.
Anyway, I teased Harry a little bit. Harry Nelson is the founder and managing partner of Nelson Hardiman. It's Los Angeles's largest boutique healthcare law firm. He's also the author of two books, The United States of Opioids, A Prescription for Liberating a Nation in Pain, as well as From Obamacare to Trump Care, and Why You Should Care. We've had Harry on a couple times. Last time, I think we talked about the book, United States of Opioids. That's something that we would expect to talk to a leading healthcare lawyer about. But I'm not sure when we spoke to Harry last time that we ever thought that we would be talking about vaccinations and pandemics. Harry, when you went into healthcare law, and you've been doing this for a long time, did you ever consider what you would be talking about today, vaccinations and this pandemic?
Alan, I did not expect to be spending so much time, you know, for me, since March, it's been all COVID all the time. There hasn't been a lot of time to talk about opioids, which is a personal passion of mine. But it is just a never ending series of issues that are coming up around what we do about it, how we still get healthcare to people around it. It's just it's basically taken over my work and my life.
And am I correct when I say, Harry, that you do have credibility in this regard because you have focused so much on it, not only in the last few months, but you understand how law and medicine interact as a lawyer? Because there's so many people out there giving opinions, and they don't have, I would say, you know, experience or the know-how to give the opinions. Does that bother you? Because we're going to talk a little bit about the vaccinations and, you know, what we can look hopefully forward to. But does it bother you that, and, you know, Carrie, you want to jump in here too, because you have a lot of opinions. But Harry, you've really done the research and you've been studying this and you have clients that are involved in this.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, for me, like the thing that keeps me on the straight and narrow path in terms of what I say is that I get in trouble. You know, the people I have to respond to are my clients, who are often health systems, in some cases, drug makers and life science companies, doctors, all health technology companies. And so they're listening, and also the government folks. I have to. Our office is does a lot of work with the FDA. We need to maintain good relationships and credibility. So I have a lot of people who kind of keep me boxed in. But to your point, one of the things that worries me the most in this whole conversation is there's so much noise. There is the drug companies tooting their own horns. Their investors, you know, a lot of people making a lot of money in this process. You have the people on the other side, the anti-vaccine people who have with a lot of noise. You know, at the end of the day, I'm not a clinician. I'm not a scientist. Those are the people I care the most about, whose opinions I care the most about. But I hope I can be kind of an honest mediator, because we're seeing a lot of information and trying to distill it and make it understandable.
Yeah, so I guess the burning question, I know I'm going to hand it over to Carrie because she knows more about vaccinations than I do, but let's talk about it. The elephant in the room, from your work and your research, tell us what you know about vaccinations that are in development and how likely we are going to see something that is effective and that doesn't have side effects that people are concerned about in the coming months.
So there's a lot more that we don't know than that we do. I happen to be a believer that we're going to see real vaccines by the end of the year or beginning of 2021. What we do know is that there are 220 live projects. There are, I would say, about 30 of those projects that are very serious. You know, we have three or four big ones in the United States. A lot of people have paid attention to the Moderna vaccine. There's the GlaxoSmith Sanofi vaccine, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson. And we also have these projects going on around the world, right? We have three serious vaccine efforts out of China, the AstraZeneca Oxford project. So we have a lot of very different approaches to this virus that are getting billions of dollars being tested on tens of thousands of people. So I think it's appropriate that people are concerned and worried that this process may be you know, fouled up by political interference, one way or the other. And I think it's appropriate that people are taking, you know, a pause and being careful here. But I personally believe that we've got so many efforts so seriously going on that are going to be tested on such a large scale that we are going to get, I think, not only one vaccine. I think the real challenge is we're going to end up with three or four real contenders, and we're going to have to make decisions. And my expectation is none of them are going to be a silver bullet. None of them are going to be perfect. They're only going to work for a certain percentage of people. They're all going to have different upside and downside. But we're going to get real vaccines, and that's going to be part of the way that we solve this.
And, you know, that's a great opinion that you have, and maybe it will help. But we have not cured the flu. Right. How many years have we gone with a flu shot and we have not cured the flu? Maybe it helps some. It makes others sick. It you know, look, what I'm upset about is the fact that people are not getting to see doctors, frontline doctors who are using hydroxychloroquine and Z-Pak to help people. And when there's case study after case study after case study, this is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people taking this and not dying from it. Maybe there's side effects. People are saying there's side effects. Of course, there's side effects to every single drug that's out on the market, including death. And when I say death, these are on everyday drugs. If you continue to read down, you'll see it says death on most. So when you have a doctor coming out saying, I cured 400 people, some in the 90s, some with, you know, health issues already, and they are now taken down off of YouTube, they're taken down off of Facebook. These are all doctors, frontline doctors. When you hear of nurses and doctors in Florida saying, hey, there's a hospital here, and what we do is we treat with hydroxychloroquine and Z-Pak. We haven't lost one person. When a doctor in Texas comes out and says the same thing, they are all censored.
Carrie, we have to take a break.
I'll tell you what Dr. Fauci said after the break.
But I'm going to let Harry respond, because I think you're talking about apples and oranges.
Not at all.
And my issue here is, if we're going to open up the country and my kids can go back to school and everything, we're looking at vaccines. We're not looking at treatment for an infection.
Okay,
so,
it's
Harry,
not treatment.
I want you to address that after
the
break.
It's not treatment.
Alan,
I got to take a break.
All right.
I land somewhere in between. I think we need treatments. The hydroxychloroquine has been a mess. We can talk more about that issue.
I got it. Is anyone listening to me here? I have to take a break.
Okay, take a break, Alan.
I got to take a break.
Do it.
I'm sorry.
Do it.
800-222-5222, 800-222-5222. You don't want to miss it after this break, because I think Harry's going to have something to say about what Carrie just did. You're listening to Gurvey's Law right here on 790 KBC. Yeah, we are back. I'm Alan Gurvey, and I'm here with Carrie Kasem. We are speaking to the founder and managing partner of Nelson Hardiman, Harry Nelson, one of the leading healthcare lawyers in our country. And before the break, Harry Carey made some comments that I thought were out of left field. I know she doesn't think that, but I want to focus on the vaccine, and you can respond to the comments. But the people I know, and it's not, I'm not talking about anti-vaxxers, or I'm not talking about hydrochloroquine users or anything like that. I'm talking about people who are living in fear every day and need something like a vaccine to get them back into normal life.
No, I'm with you, Alan. I think the vaccine is going to be a breakthrough moment if we can get uptake in the population at a significant percentage so that we really start to get real herd immunity. I'm very nervous about putting my foot in the hydroxychloroquine conversation. You know, the only thing I'll say is we should not be getting medical advice from political leaders on either party. We want scientists to be doing the work.
Thank you.
I think that there are some people, I've seen some studies that suggest there is promise to it prophylactically if it's taken early. And then the FDA action last month was not to discount it. It was simply to say we want a larger trial of it. What's interesting.
Oh, wait, 60 years is not a larger trial. 60 years is not enough. I just want to say this, Alan.
We're getting off base.
No, it's
Harry's
not. You were going
to
let me. This is from
about,
Dr. Fauci.
Listen to the difference. Prevention.
It's not. Can you let me read the quote? Can you let me read the quote from Dr. Fauci himself?
You're talking about treatment.
No,
okay, go ahead.
Not.
Read the quote.
I'm not.
I want to talk about prevention.
Fine, got it. The Virology Journal, the official publication of Dr. Fauci's National Institute of Health, published this August 22nd, 2005. Chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of SARS coronavirus infection and spread. We report that chloroquine has strong, antiviral effects on SARS-CoV infection of primate cells. These inhibitory effects are observed when the cells are treated with the drug, suggesting both prophylactic and therapeutic advantage. But he goes on to say, so HQC functions as both a cure and a vaccine. This is in his own, this is unbelievable. So 60 years of a trial, saying this in 2005, now that needs more trials, it's been around 60 years. This is from Fauci himself.
With all respect, Carrie, with respect.
I need some help, Carrie.
Yeah, no, here's what I would say is, first of all, I don't know what 60 years is meaningless. We've had SARS-CoV-1, which was what we know as the SARS virus, has been, you know, been with us 7-8 years. That's, by the way, that's all the learning we're doing is about that virus, but that was a different virus. It has some similar aspects like the spike proteins, but we're in a new territory. And frankly, that's been the big challenge is we're 8 months, 7 months into this virus to COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2. But we are probably years and years away from really understanding what the most effective treatment is going to be.
Now, don't you think that they should allow doctors and patients who've been cured by hydroxychloroquine and a Z-Pak to speak and not taken down off of YouTube and not taken down off of Facebook? I know hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, not personally, but people who have been blocked to say, like, there's a doctor who cured 400 of them, right? There's another doctor in Texas who's talking about she doesn't have a patient die because she used that formula. There's a hospital in Florida who haven't lost any patients. Every time they try and speak out, they are cut off. They are censored. They are discredited.
All right, Harry,
can I just, Alan, can I say one thing quickly?
Go ahead.
I think you're hitting a really tough issue, which is we absolutely want we want to know what doctors around the country are doing. We do not want censorship of medical data. The problem is this issue has become so toxic in the political conversation around it, that we've had, and we have the social media platforms like YouTube, and Facebook being worried that they're putting out misinformation. So I just think it would be if everybody took a step back on the political front and allowed our scientific leaders our scientific journals to publish, we would get some clarity. But I think the confusion isn't all. I don't think it's just a censorship effort against it's really the problem is it's become so politicized. And if I had one point of this whole conversation, I would just tell people, do not allow yourself to get sucked into the politics. This is a scientific question of what works and what doesn't work.
So doctors should be allowed to speak.
Let me ask you this. With the money that is being spent by a lot of these large drug companies and foundations and organizations, would it be wrong to suggest that kind of money is being spent because a vaccine is much more or potentially effective for the country and the world as a whole versus simply adopting what Carrie's saying, you know, with hydrochloroquine and Z-Pak? You know, obviously you're not going to make money. The drug's been out for a long time. So when you trash Bill Gates and his foundation and when people trash drug companies, are they just in it for the money, Harry, or do they really want to help people get their lives back?
No, I think the drug companies, look, you can't take money out of the equation, but there is clearly, this is the pressing issue of our day is how do we rebuild our society, right? How do we reopen our schools? How do we reopen our economy? And I think the drug companies realize that this is a historic opportunity to do something good. I don't think we should ever hold them up and put a halo on top of them like they are just all about social welfare. But I think this is everybody realizes this is a critical step to get the global economy together up and running, to get the American economy up and running. And the drug companies are really a critical piece of doing that.
You know, and Carrie might have something to say about this because I'm going to mention Dr. Fauci. Mm-hmm. Not too long ago, he talked about an upper arm injection of plasma, a very attractive concept, he called it. is that an alternative to a vaccine, or is that something that would be used in concert with it? You know, tell us what you know from the vaccines that are being developed and other alternatives, such as what Carrie's mentioned.
So, you know, the way I the convalescent plasma conversation is really important. I would liken it to, you know, if we get a vaccine by January from one of these companies, it's a working vaccine will be a home run. But convalescent plasma is a single that's available right now, to use a baseball analogy. It is convalescent plasma, which means taking the immunoglobulin, the blood product out of the plasma, out of somebody who already has the antibodies, and putting it into another person gives some level of production. It's a slower process to manufacture. There's less profit in it. And
less side effects.
It's a much more concentrated product, that can't scale. You know, if you look at the dosing of vaccine that we're going to need with 7 billion people, we're going to need like something. And then they're saying whatever vaccine we come up with is going to require two doses. We're going to need 14 billion doses. So convalescent plasma doesn't work on that scale, but convalescent plasma is not getting the attention it needs today and the funding to make it more widely available.
Because it's not a drug, correct?
Because
it's not a drug, Harry.
Well, so one view of it is that it's not a drug. Another view, I mean, just not to be a sort of a balancing here, I do think that the government, and not just the U.S. government, because governments around the world are making the same choice, are basically saying we need to solve this problem at scale,
right,
and a vaccine is going to do that. And so they're not putting the same level of money into plasma.
Okay, just want to say something. There was a massive lawsuit that was won 2 years ago by Robert Kennedy Jr. and Del Bigtree. They proved that vaccines did not have safety testing. It was proven. You can look it up. If you look up Robert Kennedy Jr. Del Bigtree lawsuit for safety testing of vaccines, they won it. They proved that there is no safety testing on vaccines, and they don't have to safety test. Look at the lawsuit. I can send it to you. And everybody else listening, do your research. Do it. So if they've proved that, and there's very little safety testing now. You're coming up with, like, I'm using your own words, this is a brand new coronavirus, brand new. We're just all of a sudden going to have how many tests does it need? Doesn't it need to go through rigorous tests for years and years to see the side effects, to see everything else? I mean, you really think it's going to be safety tested in less than a year?
There's two questions here.
Okay.
First of all, the scale at which these are being tested in phase three, right? The way it works is you do a phase one safety test on a small group. You do a phase two efficacy test on a, let's say, 100 people. But then the phase three in the United States is being done at 30,000 people. So it's true that we're only going to get side effects in a short window of time.
Right.
But we are going to see, we're going to see if there's something that's hurting people. If there's a real immediate risk, we're going to see it.
It's going to be censored. We're not. And you know that. It will not. Because none of the people, the injuries right now of vaccines, do you hear anything? And they can't say anything. You know why? Because in vaccine court, they're told to shut up and take their money. And you know who pays for it? Not the vaccine companies, but the American people. That's who pays for a vaccine injury. And we're not hearing any of them.
If we don't trust the reporting, by the way, and these are in peer-reviewed journals like New England Journal of Medicine, Lancet in the UK, Journal of the American Medical Association. If we don't believe that data, then we're really in trouble.
There's some wrong data in it, and there have been people talking about certain things like that, and they get censored. Why is there not a debate? Why is there not a debate, right, against people who are virologists, people who have seen other things that are not allowed out there? Why?
You know, one of the problems that I've had, and Carrie and I have gone at it on this issue for a number of weeks now.
Months.
And one of the problems that I have, and maybe Harry, because you're an expert, you can bring some credibility here, is that there are isolated people that Carrie brings up when she talks about lawsuits or she talks about some of the problems that have occurred, rather than looking at the big picture and seeing that, you know, 95% of the physicians are looking at the science, are looking at New England Journal of Medicine, for instance, versus a small percentage, maybe led by Robert Kennedy, who has been on our show before. So, Harry, comment on that. We only have a minute before the break. Quickly, if you could just comment on the isolated incidents that Carrie—it's
not isolated.
Carrie, I like you, so I say this with affection. Like,
okay.
I I really think that you have bought into to these arguments that are being cherry picked, right? You can always find a counter argument and you can make a case for that this is all wrong. But the reality is, if you look at vaccines broadly across all the vaccines we have, the efforts to debunk vaccines, and this is particularly true, the one that hurt the most was the autism. This Dr. Wakefield who put out bad information.
I have a whole other thing. And if you want to tell me the story, I can combat that with five, six, seven different doctors.
Okay, the anti-vaccine movement is not grounded in science. It's not grounded in fact. I'm not saying that we shouldn't take the concern seriously, but I do think that it's very dangerous. And I think that we need to get a vaccine out here. We need, if we can't trust the New England Journal of Medicine and Lancet, then I think we're really in trouble.
Here's the problem. And I really like you too, Mary. We have to take a break.
We have to take a break.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll finish it after.
Yeah, we'll pick it up. Harry's staying with us, so we're going to pick it up.
Okay, good.
You know, the issue I want to also talk to you, Harry, after the break is, you know, Alan Dershowitz came out and said that if there is a vaccine, it could be mandatory. I want to talk about that. It's a legal issue, whether you can make a vaccine mandatory. And the other thing is, the other point I'm going to make, and Carrie's going to be mad, but I'm going to make it before the break, and she can yell at me after the break. But without vaccines, I would shudder to think what could happen to people and what diseases could run rampant without vaccines. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yeah, we are back. I'm Alan Gervie. Carrie is madly gesturing in the studio. I'm watching her on FaceTime. People are wondering why I didn't come into the studio today. I mean, it was for my safety. Harry Nelson should be giving an award, an honor for taking the risk of being in the studio with Carrie.
Now, he's got no risk, and there's a reason why. But maybe he'll tell you. But here's the thing, and this is what I wanted to say. You know, you can come at me with all the propaganda that's being used in marketing stuff right now, whether it's pharmaceutical, you know, and it's done by the news or not. But when you haven't read the other side, when you actually haven't looked into major lawsuits against pharmaceuticals that were won, and you don't know your research on the other side, you can't argue. And you learn that in college, you know, debate 101. And I have looked at both sides. Am I anti-vax? Absolutely not. If I got bitten by a rabid dog, I'd be the first one flying to get my, you know, my rabies vaccine. I am not. And I think there are some vaccines that are good, but there are some that are not. And it's been proven the damage they do to people. And instead of saying, look, we're going to do safety testing. Wait, instead of that, they just let it go. And then when people get injured, we pay for it. And that is not okay. All I'm saying is let there be safety testing, let there be transparency, and let vaccine court be taken care of by the vaccine companies, not the American people.
Harry, maybe we don't have the time with this particular pandemic to be doing everything that Kerry wants, because people's lives have changed so dramatically. People are losing their work. They're losing their homes. There's a lot of suicides and people, divorces. A lot of things happening. Kids are affected so dramatically by this for their development. So maybe Carrie is living in this, you know, rose-colored glasses world and doesn't understand that we really need something now.
How many experts have to agree with me, Alan, that we've had on the show?
No, Alan, I'm with you in this conversation. Look, I think there's a lot of pieces to unpack here. I think this issue is going to come to a head because I think what Carrie is saying appears to be the view is shared by about half of the American population. So it's not a fringe view, even though I think it's not grounded in science. I'm happy to read whatever you're going to give
me.
But what scares me is we're really going to be the moment that the crunch time is going to be next spring, because it's going to be early 2021 when we actually have some proven viruses that will have been safety tested on each
vaccines
one
on mean vaccines, not
vaccines.
Vaccines yeah, yeah. on 30,000. There'll be vaccines tested on at least 30,000 people in the FDA phase three. We're going to have to start getting them in distribution. We already have challenges of how we're going to get them out there. But assuming that we can get them out there, if 50% of the American population is standing where you are, Carrie, and doesn't want to take them, we're going to be stuck. We're going to continue to have a death rate that's going to be horrific.
Horrific. 0.00046.
Okay,
you yourself said, that 0.0046
We can't have, you know what?
I don't like hearing this because you talk to people who have lost family members, and I know a lot of them who have lost family members because of this that didn't expect to lose it. You know, Cain is just something that we heard about this week, but I wonder, we only have 2 minutes with you, Harry, and I wish we had the whole hour, but let's address the question of mandatory vaccines. It can be a legal question. We can talk about constitution. You know, you said 50%. I think you're high on that. I don't think that there's 50% that share Carrie's view, but I know that it's significant. What is the prospect from a legal perspective that a vaccine would be required, for instance, for students to go back to school? Or for people to go into work.
The number I was quoting was 50% of people are reluctant to take a vaccine, maybe not buying the whole enchilada that Carrie's talking about. But, I think that, first of all, there's no question that, state governments have the right to impose vaccine requirements. We see it already in schools with MMR, measles, mumps, rubella. And it's very clear to me that at some point we're going to have a mandatory vaccine for schools. I think the question for me is really, when is it going to come? Are we going to, and I think that it's going to be, I think a lot of school districts and a lot of local and state governments are going to struggle with this fear in the American public. And my hope is that in the spring of next year, when the vaccine starts to get out in distribution, we're going to see positive results, positive statistics on rates of infection, rates of hospitalization, death rates dropping in the areas where the vaccine is spread and in the populations that it spread, and that's going to build some confidence here, because we are going to ultimately need this, and I do believe it will be a mandate in schools. I just don't think it's going to be until the American public is a little bit calmer about this issue.
Right. So we're going to hear, and we're going to have full transparency, because we never hear how many people get sick after they've taken the flu virus, only that you should take the flu vaccine. So we're never going to hear about the bad side effects. They never tell you. Do you ever hear anything about the horrible side effects of the flu vaccine? I've seen it on people. I've seen people get deathly ill, including
my
father.
We're going to have to end it here.
You going to know some anything people about the COVID vaccine? You think
I don't know, Carrie. I wish I had done a little bit more of my reading on the conspiracy theories. I don't call it a conspiracy theory.
You know, the IRS came up with that, and the CIA
to discredit
people who had a different opinion than them.
A lot of these conversations turn into this talk. So next time you're on the show, get ready for conspiracy theories.
Sorry, you mean another opinion? Let's actually call it that. Or are you guys into censorship?
Hey, all right. I wanted to say,
Harry,
thank you.
I really like you. You're the Carrie, nicest attorney we
Alan,
have
really,
on this show.
Harry, really great to be you with do. You.
Harry,
he's like, I'm never coming
you know,
back again.
I just want to say, Harry, I appreciate the work you're doing on this, because some of us are willing to take the risk in order for the greater good of everyone. So I'm acknowledging Carrie's arguments, but there are people willing to take the risk to correct our world so that it can be something similar to what we experienced before this all happened. Harry Nelson is exactly who you think he is, the leading lawyer on healthcare in the country, founding managing partner of Nelson Hardiman. Thanks for being with us today, Harry.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Harry.
We're going to take a quick break. After the break, Jeff Lewis is coming on. We're going to talk about Harry and Meghan and some drones. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes. We are back. I'm Alan Gervie. She's Carrie Kasem. We're not speaking to each other right now, but that's okay. We've been doing this for 7 years, so we kind of get it. Carrie, take yourself off pause. I want to see you. We're FaceTiming. I'm at home and Carrie's in the studio.
Harry
Please
wanted
take
a
yourself
picture.
Off pause.
Harry wants a
What's
picture.
That?
I had to give Harry a picture. He still likes me after the
wait
show.
Wait a second. You two took a picture. Wayman's playing Don't Stand So Close to Me. You're socially distant and you're taking a picture together.
He doesn't have to worry about COVID. So just you can ask him about that later and he can tell you why.
Oh, that is so cool. I wish I could say that same thing.
Yeah.
So you had a nice picture. That's
yeah,
nice.
It's a real nice picture. Real
okay,
nice.
Let's talk to Jeff Lewis now. He's a First Amendment and privacy attorney. The firm is called Jeff Lewis Law, and he is the founding partner of Jeff Lewis Law. Jeff, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Hi, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. I hope that the conversation is a little less controversial than Carrie's conversation with Harry. And I guess they're still taking the picture because they're paused.
No, we're here now. I'm back.
You're back. Okay, there you are. Nice to see your face again. Talk to us, Jeff, about this Prince Harry, Meghan Markle lawsuit. And is it an invasion of privacy? And I know that's not an easy question. That's your area of expertise. But we're talking about drones taking pictures. Is that an invasion of privacy?
Well, let me answer it this way. If everything that's alleged in the complaint is true, it's absolutely an invasion of privacy. But the big question is, these photographs that are being peddled somewhere for sale, the photographs of baby Archie, nobody knows how they were taken. It's alleged possibly that it was taken by a drone flown in the backyard of a royal couple, but we don't know how those pictures were taken.
They moved from Canada because this was happening in Canada. The Daily Mail gave out their address and now it's happening here. How do you stop that? They must have a lawsuit. They must have, a major lawsuit on privacy if they're giving out an address as well, not just the pictures.
You know, that's an interesting issue. You know, the address, publicly disclosing someone's address on the internet is not a subject of this lawsuit. What this lawsuit seeks to seek redress for is obtaining the picture through technology,
right,
peddling the picture, selling it, and possibly transmitting it. And I think one possible motive for this lawsuit is the royal couple doesn't need money, but perhaps this is a warning shot to any paparazzi who try to take pictures or sell pictures or even publish pictures, that if you mess with this couple, they're going to you're going to be buying a lawsuit.
Now, I know in France, they have these really strict laws about people and their children. And I'm surprised. Maybe why can't they move there? Why don't people move there when they have that, if they really don't want to be bothered? California is known for how horrible their laws are. We have an anti-slap law here, so people can do and say what they want, and most of the time they can't get any retribution.
Yeah, that's the most fascinating thing about this story. Why does the son of Princess Diana, who was hounded to her death by the paparazzi, why does somebody like that move to the paparazzi capital of the world,
right,
Hollywood, and think that they're not going to get attention?
It doesn't make sense. I know, I think Meghan Markle, I think this is her hometown, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe she just wanted to be near family. I can understand that. But it just seems, it seems like they're welcoming it. They want it. And not saying they do. It's almost like a welcome to the paparazzi.
Yeah, by moving here and living in Beverly Hills, of all the cities in Southern California to pick, Beverly Hills is known for paparazzi. And using the royal titles, and even in this lawsuit, I noticed the way the lawsuit is captioned, they still use the royal titles. So it seems like perhaps they're using their brand to maintain their name and their presence in the newspapers.
But Jeff, being a devil's advocate here, isn't there some anticipation that they would have a private life regardless of where they are? They're supposed to be living in what, Tyler Perry's mansion, $18 million. You would think that regardless of what city you're in or what country you're in, tell us about how a public figure like the prince and Meghan Markle would differ from a private person and why that is the case. I think that there should be some anticipation of privacy.
For sure, especially behind the walls of your own home. in your house. So if you're, for example, in your living room and a drone flies into your backyard and a camera is poking through your window taking pictures of you, I think most judges would find that's an invasion of privacy. What about the photographers that are just standing on their street in front of their home in a public area taking pictures from there? I don't know that most lawyers or most judges would agree that there's any invasion of privacy standing in a public place.
Can you shoot down a drone if it's in your property?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. All I can say is it probably depends on how low it is and whether or not you felt threatened by it. But that's a great question.
Yeah, even if it's not, you know, with a gun, but something to take it out, you know, because if somebody's looking through my windows with a camera, I'm going to throw a rock at it. I'm going to throw a shoe at it. I'm going to, you know, shoot my gun at it. I probably wouldn't because I wouldn't want to get in trouble. But yeah, do
but
anything.
Terry, what about, you know, recently, I can't remember the guy's name, the lawyer in Missouri who with his wife came out with the gun.
I saw that. They're going to win their lawsuit. Yeah, you're right, Alan.
Ask Jeff. Ask Jeff. I mean, you're talking about the same kind of thing. Can you fight this with some aggression versus having to accept that these people, the paparazzi, the dronerazzi, whoever, are doing a job that they apparently don't like?
Well, sure, you can be aggressive. One way is to physically combat a drone, but another way is the filing of this lawsuit and saying you're going to seek disgorgement of all profits that are made by anybody who touches these photos or publishes these photos. That's a pretty huge aggressive move by these lawyers for the royal couple.
Yeah, and the question is whether they're going to be successful. From your experience, can people succeed in a lawsuit like this when you're talking about profits and interference with prospective economic advantage?
Yeah, that's the biggest question about this lawsuit. In papers filed on Thursday, the couple's lawyer described it as a race against the clock because they don't know who took these pictures. So they sued 100 Doe defendants. And now they're issuing subpoenas. They got permission on Friday to issue subpoenas to the three of the biggest companies that peddle celebrity photos to try to find out who actually took these photos and who's emailing about these photos. And the race is, can they get a court to issue an injunction before these pictures hit the internet and money changes hands? That's the big question.
You know, maybe they need to change the laws here. You know, maybe that's what they need to work on. And you can go after this as much as you can, and maybe they'll win, maybe they won't. But if there's an actual law that they start working on, you know, maybe that would give more protection to celebrities.
You know, it's interesting. The law that's currently in place, I believe there was a stricter law that initially proposed that specifically named drones as a prohibited activity for getting pictures. I believe Governor Brown vetoed that law. And so you have this kind of watered down law that has a bit of vague language that if a judge concludes the photograph was taken in a way that's offensive to a reasonable person, then a judge can find that a violation of the statute happened, which is kind of a vague standard as opposed to making it illegal to use a drone to take a picture.
Do you think that they have a chance of winning this? Do you think, I mean, there's a whole bunch of John Does and Jane Does and who they're suing. Do you think they're actually going to get the names of the photographers and go after them? Do you really think they have a chance?
I think given enough time, they absolutely will find out who did it. The question is, will they find out before the pictures hit the internet? Because they've sent subpoenas to the three biggest companies. They're going to do more subpoenas. They have personal investigators. They'll find out who was peddling these pictures for sale. But the question is, will they be transmitted or published overseas beyond the reach of California law, or will all happen before you get a judge to issue an order? And another complication is with COVID-19, our courtrooms are really, really slow right now. It's hard to get judges' attention unless there's a true emergency. And that's another challenge facing the royal couple.
Where do you see the line being drawn? You know, you're dealing with this all the time. And, you know, you mentioned if someone's going to stick a camera in someone's bedroom, well, you know, they're not going to get away with that. But, you know, in law school, we always hear about the air being free and you can go outside and if you hear an idea, for instance, it's not stealing an idea. Someone's talking about it. So people are living their lives. There's paparazzi around. Where do we draw the line? And I know, you know, the drone may be one of those tough issues, but maybe there are easier issues.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. One of the things you could look at is the context. Is this a couple that puts themselves in the light and therefore invites attention? Or is this a private couple that typically shuns media and therefore a violation like this would be more egregious? That's one factor a court could look at in drawing the line. Another is the degree to which sophisticated technology is used. So taking a picture with your iPhone on the front step is very different than using a very expensive drone with a high-quality camera that's technology that maybe not everybody has access to.
You know, right? They said that they understand that they are newsworthy. They understand that what they do is newsworthy. But the photos taken of their son are harassment, and that's what they're saying. They're invasive, and it's to profit from a child.
It's interesting. The law actually allows for disgorgement of profits. If they find out who did this and if anybody made any money off of these photographs, they can get a judge, to the extent the judge has jurisdiction, to force that person to turn over all their profits to the royal couple or to the baby.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be really interesting. We only have a minute left. Jeff, if you were looking into your crystal ball, and I know we're not going to hold you to it, what's going to happen with this, and where's the future going with this kind of surveillance?
Well, in this case, the big date is Wednesday, when the three big celebrity photo companies have to answer a subpoena. And that's when we're going to know whether or not anything's going to happen, because either they have documents, emails, photos, or they don't. If they don't, then this lawsuit may not be successful and these photos might get published. But if they do, if there's documents that are produced in response to these subpoenas on Wednesday, I think you could probably see a settlement occurring or something happening out of the public eye.
Wow. Something to watch out for, and I think it's going to be interesting as we move forward. Jeff Lewis, we want to thank you for being with us here on Gervie's Law today. Jeff Lewis is the principal and founding partner at Jeff Lewis Law, and his website is jefflewislaw.com. Thanks for being with us, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Carrie.
Yes.
You okay?
And yeah, I'm fine. I don't get hyped up a lot on this show because a lot of times we don't.
Yes, you do.
No, not that hyped up. That was pretty aggressive, I think.
I was pretty upset. Yeah, no, you're doing fine. And it would have been so much easier if Dov Charney would have come on like he was supposed to. Today we were supposed to have Dov Charney.
You throw our guests under the bus. Maybe, you know, couldn't come in.
Well, our guests were coming on anyway, but, you know, we had to move them up in the schedule because Dov canceled on us. Last week, I said Dov Charney, who is the former founder of American Apparel and formerly of American Apparel, who opened up Los Angeles Apparel, and there were 275 positive tests of coronavirus, and it was all over the LA Times, and Dov was going to come on and talk about what happened at his LA Los Angeles Apparel company that resulted in all of these coronavirus infections, and what they were doing there. He claimed that it was just the percentage of people who get it, and he just has a lot of employees. I don't really buy that, but maybe Dov will come back on. I don't know why he canceled.
Well, I have no idea. Did you hear if any of the employees, they all made it through, correct? Everybody's okay?
I don't know. That's what we were going to ask Dov. And if he wouldn't have canceled, we would have had a lot more information. And I just, you know, I really honor people who honor their words. And if they say they're going to be on the show, I think they should be on the show.
Well,
and,
you know, but
I think it's wimpy to not.
But some people cancel because they're on the advice of their lawyers. Maybe don't talk about it, right? Some people
cancel.
Well,
then bring their lawyer. Keith Fink was happy. Keith Fink's been on our show, Dov Charney's lawyer. Come on, guys. You can, if you're in the kitchen, you can handle the heat. All right.
Okay.
Well, I'm not teasing next week's show. You guys are going to have to listen to find out to see who canceled, who wimped out.
Oh, God.
Dov is an event. Dov's ghosting Genevieve now.
Yeah.
We can talk about ghosting. Genevieve Wong, our producer, is getting ghosted by Dov Charney. Anyway, thanks for listening to Gervie's Law. We're looking forward to talking to you again next week, same time, KVC 790.
This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.